So this is taking place in the Quad Cities on Wednesday the 4th and in Macomb on Thursday the 5th. What are you going to be talking about?
Actually, the speech is personal and historical, so I'm going to share with my audience some of the things that I've learned by being a dancer, modern dancer in New York. And as a part of that, which is the personal part of that, I'll be talking about the history of African-derived dance in the United States. It's not a history lesson, however. It's just using dancers and qualities from what comprises an African-derived aesthetic or style, you know, and to look at that and to talk to the audience about what I consider living fully or full throttle living according to Kabat-Zinn. And what is that? A scholar, Robert Ferris Thompson, who's an art historian, and he worked at Yale for many, many years and now is a professor emeritus, who's also European-American, trained as an art scholar, but also a Yoruba practitioner. And so he learned the dances and the rhythms. He's not a dancer, but he also wrote about the qualities, what he calls the canons of fine form. All right, he wrote about them and articulated them as they exist in African-derived dance forms, but also in the songs, in the chants, etc. And so I'm going to talk just a little bit about one of the qualities or canons of fine form, which is called vital aliveness. And I'm using that as a metaphor for how to live more fully. How do you tap into this energy that we all have, whether you're a dancer? And I think people might say to me during the talk or be thinking, well, I'm not an artist. But my perception is that we're all artists. We just have to find our unique energy. And whether we're a mathematician or a sociologist, to find that energy and how can we put that energy not only into our work, but then into the world. And I don't mean that in some ethereal way, but really on the ground. So if you're into environmental studies, you figure out, well, how can I use this passion that I have to make the world a better place? So essentially, that's what I'm trying to do in the talk. And so I talk a little bit personally about coming from where I come from, not Harlem specifically, but about what I learned there and how the culture that I come from aided me in, I think, when I went to when I decided to become a dancer. And then how the dance has always energized me. And even though I've been here 14 years officially, almost 12, you know, that I've actually been on campus, it's always that dance energy and that artistic creativeness that's made, I think, my courses more fun, not only for me, but as I've included more of that kind of energy and that full throttle living, and what can I do with this? How can I put this information on the ground? Has made it more exciting, not just for me, but I think for my students.
How would you apply dance to everyday life?
Well, again, Rich, what I'm talking about is the energy. When you listen to music, you hear this rhythmical energy, whether you're listening to Prokofiev or Rachmaninoff or, you know, LL Cool J or Max Roach, you know, so the genres, that's what I'm talking about. And so that's what pulls us in to these varying kinds of musical forms. And if we could find ways, very simple ways, to tap in to that same kind of energy in what we do, I think that's what changes us. And that's what changes the people around us. So I think I'm very rooted in the liberal arts, particularly, of course, in the humanities, but also the social sciences. When you have that energy, you vibrate, I think, in ways that increase your humanity. And so then other people want to sort of jump into the ball game with you because it's not so much what you're teaching, it's the energy that you bring to it that really pulls people in. And so I would argue, as I do when I'm talking to dancers or I'm doing some sort of dance scholarly event, it's the rhythms and the energy that sucks you into the vortex of something that has the potential to be great. And you feel it because it's not intellectual. It's sensual. And then you bring that intellectual piece to the senses. And that creates the excitement.
Find your passion first and then think about it or delve into it mentally?
Well, I think it happens almost simultaneously. But, yeah, you have to – I believe we got to take our passion every place. And then people, when I talk about dance, people say, oh, you light up. And then other people start to light up. So it's both. I don't know which – the horse before the cart, et cetera. I can't really say. But I know it comes together, you know, in a way like – I never thought I would be a dancer. I started out in health and science and physics. And something happened. I saw a performance and I said, I want to do that. And I liked that feeling of being able to change people during these intimate moments of watching or hearing poetry, watching a performance, hearing music, even hearing what you have to say about chemistry or math, you know. But when you put it on the ground and you show the students an experiment, what can you do with chemistry out in the street, which I had a professor was doing that with students at Xavier. I was there one summer, and they were so excited, even the ones who said, I don't like science, you know, but they were excited because they could see what it does. So thinking, yes, in African philosophical terms, very traditional, you bring the head and the heart and the gut together. And that really very clearly sums up the philosophy that I use. Your head is intellectual. In the Western realm, or at least in these United States, in the Western world, we think about rationality, the intellect, has priority over everything. But usually when we love something, it's not because we thought, ooh, I think I might love that. And so now I'm going to select to do. No, we feel something and then we try to make sense of it. So, you know, it doesn't really start in your head, I don't think. I think it starts with your lived experience.
And that's the message you're hoping to convey next week?
Yes, that's the message that I'm hoping to convey, and how we can use like the liberal arts, humanities, and sciences to enhance that. It's not we start with that. We start with who we are as human beings. So we really start in our individualized cultural base. And then we move from there. We meet people. You say, wow, I never met somebody from Greece before. I never met somebody from South Africa. But then you not only meet them, but maybe you go there. And in the dance and in the music from those varying cultures that I mentioned, you literally go to the place. You go to the culture. And so if I could... That's what I've been attempting to teach. This is my 44th year of teaching. That's what I've been attempting to do. Whether I was in math, I was in biology, in literature, African American studies, and women's studies. And that's what, and that draws them in. And then intellectually, I can start to open up and disseminate these ideas that I think are important. But basically, I'm about, and I hope we all are as teachers, are really about expanding the humanity of our students so that they can interact with other human beings in the world and make the world a better place. So when I'm an old lady in my rocking chair and I can't dance, you know, anymore, and I look around and I see this humanity growing, that to me is success.
Well, where are you now? You're in women's studies, right?
I'm in women's studies, and I teach classes that are cross-listed with English and African American studies. This semester, I'm teaching Black women in the U.S. hip-hop feminism.
She says with a laugh.
You know, and I'm teaching women in literature, which is cross-listed with English and women's studies, and introduction to women's studies.
So when you deal with students, or maybe with just people in general, are you finding they're passionate about things, or do they need to find that passion?
Well, it's a mixed bag. Some people really are passionate, and then I feel like it's my job to try to enhance that passion, you know? Well, you don't know. I hate saying you know. Sorry. But to enhance that passion, how do you do that? I mean, you offer them a perspective maybe on something that they already knew about, but they hadn't looked at it through the lens that you offer them. And that's how I think they can expand, because we were talking yesterday in the hip hop class. So right now we're doing history. And so the piece that they read was pretty difficult, but it was about the Black Women's Club movement, the Black Panthers, and the Civil Rights Movement. And how those movements, what do they share with hip hop culture? So that they could look at it in a different way, because the news only emphasizes the gangbangers and the H's and the B's. And, you know, that's not a portion. Let's not throw out the baby with the bathwater. All of hip hop is not terrible, because what the media has chosen to emphasize is all the negativity. And so I'm trying to get my students to see, well, how is this a continuum of, say, a musical movement that started, at least in this country, with enslavement? You have field hollers, you have one line blues, two line blues, three, four line blues that really moves into the official blues, you know, and then we move into jazz. But in jazz early days, we had bebop and all this. So what are they doing? And I told them this experience I had. I interviewed Max Roach. Because I was a dancer, I got to interact with Max Roach and Reggie Workman, who's still alive, but Max is gone, mm-hmm. and Don Pullen, who's gone, and those guys. And Max was playing with some of the early hip-hop artists, like KRS-One, all right, and Fab Five Freddy. And these guys are, you know, they're not really out there anymore. They're not doing those things. And I said, Mr. Roach, what is it about these young men, and this is early 80s. What is it about these young men and what they're doing on the turntable, and scratching had just come in to play? He said, this is part of a continuum. And sure enough, I was at enough of those concerts in the East Village, West Village, all over New York, all right, where they were playing. And you could hear the scatting in the scratching. It's part of a continuum. And there was Max with his drum set, dressed conservatively, very fly, very Dapper Dan-ish, you know, and playing with these young kids. And at that point, he was probably 50, late 50s, early 60s. You know, he was an elder and well-respected. And I got to talk with him on so many occasions. I used to talk to him about choreography, because he loved the company that I was dancing with, and he had a rapport with Diane McIntyre. Same with Don Pullen. So this hip-hop culture, because people don't understand, I'm not talking about the trash in there. There's trash within the genre.
Any music, there's some trash, any genre, sure.
Yeah, but if they really could understand what had happened historically, then when they listen to it, they're listening for something else. If they hear Cool Heck, Cool DJ Heck with a K, he was considered the father of hip-hop because he was the first one who started scratching and doing the breaks. If they listen to it in a different way, because they know the history, they'll start to see other things. And then that's created a kind of excitement. Just in the last 2 weeks, when I asked them, I said, anybody know Great Wizard Theodore? Nobody in the room knew him. He was one of the people who influenced Grandmaster Flash. And he's one of the Livingston brothers, you know. And so they were early on. And what were they trying to do? And that was a time when the genre was not filled with derogatory terms about women. But I think that, to cut it short, they need to know these traditions in music, to know a break in African in a Shaker Ray orchestra or a djembe orchestra is the same break that the jazz musicians are playing on a drum. And sometimes they're plucking their violin percussively, you know, they're playing. Africans generally, and this is not to make it monolithic, but you'll hear that people of African descent or people who are playing with African-derived techniques will pluck instruments and make them sound percussive even when the instrument is not a percussive instrument. Mm-hmm. And so if these young people, they can hear that. They're smart. They can hear that. So when they hear that, they say, oh, there's something else going on in hip-hop. And I'm talking about soca music and mento music. They never talked about that. So those are precursors to reggae, which is precursors to some of the contemporary forms. But I think they're capable of understanding those techniques. They certainly have finer ears than I do in terms of listening to it. And many of them have the skills in music and the scratching and all of that. So to offer them... I'm excited about, obviously, to offer them that historical context to place on top of their contemporary experiential stuff, I think is fabulous. And I feel like I see it, you know, because they're all talking and they're saying, oh, you know. And I said, well, do you know Ella Fitzgerald? Go listen to Ella Fitzgerald. Listen to Diane Reeves. And they don't know those people. Hmm. But once they go, I said, go to YouTube. Everything's accessible. It's so easy. Go to YouTube and then play Fab Five Freddy. Go to YouTube, listen to Diane Reeves, and then listen to what's going on in some of the contemporary rap. And then the other piece of it is I get an education on the contemporary rap. They're getting an education on the early days up to about the 90s, uh-huh. because Latifah is like really a second generation, and MC Light, but clearly very different from, say, a Nicki Minaj, who I really, you know, don't have much favor for. Uh-huh. But, you know, she has her place. History will tell us what her place has been.
Yeah.
But it is about the spectacle. And historically, that's what Gwendolyn Pugh talked about, P-O-U-G-H, in the article I gave the young people. The spectacle, you have to first be seen before somebody will listen to you when you talk in terms of ethnic history and disenfranchisement and marginalization. So that, you know, it's a big ball of wax, but I'm excited. I think my students, you know, they have this energy because this is something that they grew up on. They're hip-hop children. And so it's kind of fun for me to learn more about where they are and at the same time to give them that background that hopefully will get them sailing well beyond. And we talk about, well, what does this do if people are afraid of particular kinds of dress and, you know, particular language. Like, and one guy said to me the other day, he said, I don't listen to gangster rap. I've never killed anybody. And I said, and do you have any plans to kill anybody? He said, no. So, you know, they're pretty astute, you mm-hmm. know, even, you know, and so they're astute in terms of selections, not everybody, but I think that we're underestimating, like, our young people, particularly our young people of color. And that has to do with historical structures of disenfranchisement. And so this culture, this hip-hop culture, is still a place where the spectacle can be validated, varying spectacles, for people who are of that age where they want to, you know, engage in that. But let's not throw out the baby with the bathwater. I mean, hip hop now is 40 years old. I tell them, I said, I'm kind of tired of some of it. I don't want to see anybody walking across the stage holding their balls. You know, I just, you know, I don't want to. That's like old now.
Uh-huh.
You know, but it's not old to you because you're only 20.
Hip hop is 40 years old.
Yeah, just yes, about.
It goes That's back a... to the early 70s, early
yeah,
to mid 70s.
Yeah.
I think the first one I really knew was Grandmaster Flash, The Message.
And that's, oh, yeah.
That's early 80s, though, mm-hmm. so took a while to get to at yeah. least where I was.
But it was interesting because The Message, you know, it makes me wonder sometimes, you know, how it's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under.
Yeah.
It was very social commentary.
It was.
You know, KRS-One was talking about Egypt. He was talking about ancient Kemet, actually, you know, 3,000-4,000 BC. And many of these guys that the young people are not as familiar with, they were very astute scholars. And they were very astute social scientists. They might not have had the formal degrees, but it's very interesting. Grandmaster Flash, I mean, he created the crossfade. He found a piece in the junkyard. His name is James Sadler. You Bruno. He's from Jamaican ancestry. His mother was wanted to make sure he got an education. He went to Samuel Gompers High School, you know, which is a vocational school in New York, and studied electronics. If he didn't know electronics and all that, he would not have been able to create these pieces that now we take for granted in, you know, fading from one song to another, going to the turntable. And Grand Wizard Theodore, who preceded Grandmaster Flash, but they did work together, he was the one who became famous for dropping the needle. But Grandmaster Flash used to put crayons on the vinyl to mark the spot and magic marker. And his father had a huge collection of West Indian, Caribbean music, and African American music. And he said he couldn't touch the vinyl, but he was always getting in trouble because he was touching his father's vinyl. You know, vinyl's like people who really are connoisseurs of records, like, don't touch their vinyl. They're always polishing it, you know.
You have to clean the dust off.
Exactly. And it's old. It's, you know.
Don't mark it with a crayon.
Yeah. But, I mean, when you think of it, that's, like, hilarious. And those are the kinds of stories that make Flash really human. He's not an icon. And you say, well, he's like me. He went to the junkyard in the South Bronx. I know Sedgwick Avenue, where cool DJ Herc was playing. It was a housing development for low-income people, you know. And he played in the rec room. 1520 Sedgwick Avenue. I used to live on Shakespeare Avenue. It's not very far away.
So Chicago or New York?
New York. New York. Okay. Yeah.
All right. I think that should do it. Hey, thanks for talking to me.
Oh, you're welcome, Rich. It was fun.
Good luck with the lecture.
Thank you.